Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
This is Martina Navratilova.
I'm Mats Wilander.
I'm Stan Wawrinka.
I'm Leighton Hewitt.
I'm Andy Murray.
And you're listening to The Tennis Podcast.
The Tennis Podcast.
The Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph. It is the Tennis Podcast brought to you the day after one of the most extraordinary Davis Cup ties, let alone Davis Cup finals of all time. Argentina came back from 2-1 down, the first time that's been done in a final, to beat a heartbroken Croatian team by 3-2. And of course, all of the headlines are going to a certain Mr. Juan Martin Del Potro, who picked a pretty good time to come back from 2-0 down for the first time in his career to beat Marin Cilic in the all-important fourth rubber. That was the Davis Cup final by BNP Paribas. David Law and I are here to pick the bones out of it. David, it's another one. It's another one of those moments from this 2016 tennis year that's quite difficult to sum up in words, isn't it?
It is, but given that this is a tennis podcast and we're reliant upon words, I suppose I better try and come up with something. First of all, I mean, definitely another magical moment in 2016, and there have been so many. It has got to be one of the all-time great years. We're going to have our awards show as part of this edition of the Tennis Podcast, so we'll be trying to review 2016 as part of it as well. But first of all, Catherine, got to say, you're on a bit of a roll. You're on a bit of a roll. This is 2 weeks in a row where you've got it right and I've got it wrong. First of all, the 0-2, you got all the various scenarios right, picked the winner of the tournament. I went with Marin Cilic, and I've backed him up again, and he's let me down again. So I'll be having some stern words with Marin Cilic when I see him.
He needs your stern words, David. I think he feels sick enough about it all.
Perhaps get greeted by a right hook if I try that. But I have to say, I was pretty much composing my victory speech for the podcast during that fourth rubber between him and Del Potro, because he came out playing so well, Cilic. Del Potro looked a little bit heavy legs, then he came up with the through the legs lob winner early in the third set. That seemed to galvanize him. But well, how can you deny the guy? Who cares whether I end up losing out in the predictions poll? Well, I do care.
Yeah, that's a mere footnote in all of the articles today, David.
I will swallow my pride sufficiently to note that Juan Martin Del Potro could not be a more deserving winner on a winning team. And Argentina, who've been searching for a Davis Cup victory for the best part of 100 years, they've never won it, they've been in four finals, you can't deny them. And they did it all away from home. All four matches away from home. I find that just mind-blowing. I'm so impressed with that team.
There were moments when it didn't feel away from home, though, weren't there? I mean, the Argentine travelling support is incredible, and that's not to detract at all from the Croatian home support, because that was magnificent in itself. But there were moments, particularly yesterday, when it felt like a home Argentine crowd, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. I don't really think I've seen an away following quite like that. I thought Britain were fantastic last year. That was the first Davis Cup final that I've attended in person when Britain faced Belgium. And I think that they had a great following. But the Argentina crowd, just they throw themselves into it with such gusto. And Diego Maradona was in the crowd doing his now omnipresent act of following his nation with all the gusto he could manage. And I just thought that the whole occasion was magical. I loved the way when you looked into the crowd, you saw a mixture of Argentine and Croatian shirts, and they were intermingling. And yes, I mean, it was boisterous, it was loud, it was passionate, but it wasn't unpleasant, I didn't think. I mean, I thought the fourth rubber was in danger of bubbling over a little. But I just think it was one of the great Davis Cup ties.
Oh, without question. I mean, if not the greatest that I've personally witnessed. I mean, obviously my tennis history in terms of personal experience dates back less far than yours, David. But yeah, it's probably
all
the
right,
best that
right.
I've witnessed. It's pure mathematics, David. You can't argue with that. There was a real authenticity to this support on both sides, but obviously particular focus on the Argentine side. You really, looking at them and the way they were living and breathing every point, you really felt like their entire happiness depended on the result of these tennis matches. Now, the atmosphere last year was incredible, and I think it was an introduction for a lot of British tennis fans to the Davis Cup. We've sort of been told not to take too much notice, really, or we felt like we oughtn't to take too much notice over the past 10 to 15 years because what we see isn't particularly great. And I think it was entirely authentic, the support, in terms of people really did care. And, it was this awakening to the competition. But looking at those Argentinian fans, I can't honestly say that there are any other fans in the world that live and die by every single point the way they do. I mean, you really did feel like their very being and happiness depended on the outcome of that Davis Cup final yesterday. That's, I mean, obviously, at some point they would have got over it. At some point, the Croatian fans will get over it. At some point, Marin Cilic will get over it, David. I don't know when that point will be. Do you fear for him after this, after what happened to him yesterday?
No, I don't. I think he's one of the more realistic human beings on the tennis circuit. I think he's somebody who will come to terms with what happened. It's a sporting contest. He played really well. I didn't really feel like he tossed it away. I felt like he had it wrestled from his grasp by Del Potro. It felt like there was a force with Del Potro all year long, and that this was the only way that the year was ever going to end. And maybe that's just a silly outcome to have, in my view, from me. And I don't know whether anybody believes in that kind of thing, but it felt like it was the right thing to happen in many ways, given all the struggles that this guy has had to deal with. I think Cilic will be fine. I think he will go into the off season and be very proud of what he's done, because he has had a fabulous season, and he's knocked on the door on a couple of major times. I think that this victory was more important for Del Potro than anybody else there. And, you know, I felt last night, it almost doesn't matter what else happens in his career now. I hope he goes on and has more successes in his life, because he's a great guy. But he's done this. He's done something so important for himself and for his country that he's been vindicated. His whole career has been given back to him in that one year, in that one moment. And I find it truly uplifting.
Absolutely. And just to give both you and I a moment to dab the tears from our eyes after that, David, let's hear from Del Potro and hear how he did it.
Well, I don't know how I come back in this match. I play really smart in the important moments, and I think we were fighting every time, and I really enjoyed the match. It's tough to me to say something, but I did my best playing with these colours, and it's amazing.
So that is a very, very emotional Juan Martín Del Potro. He was actually crying throughout that interview conducted by Craig Gabriel in the immediate aftermath of that incredible comeback victory over Marin Cilic, for which there are barely words. And of course, that is the match, the rubber that will grab the headlines, and rightly so. It's the rubber that will be remembered. But how about the fifth and final rubber, David? Ivo Karlovic, Federico Delbonis. I was expecting more from Ivo Karlovic. How do you explain what we saw out there?
Mainly by the performance of Delbonis. And maybe I'm going to be overkind to Karlovic. I don't think he did too much wrong. I mean, this guy's 20 in the world. He's got one of the best serves we've ever seen. And Delbonis suddenly started to read it and was just dealing with it, putting it at his ankles time after time after time. And he... We'll hear from Daniel Orsanic, the Argentine coach, in a second, just about the performance of his whole team, and he particularly references Delbonis. I haven't seen him play that much, but it was a little bit like watching Leonardo Maier against Britain in the fifth rubber in Glasgow. Just the way he was able to elevate his standard level to a level that is 20 and above, top 10 maybe. And I mean, cometh the hour. That was what we found from Delbonis. And I love the way that they did it away from home. It was as though that liberated them almost. I know, you as you mentioned, amazing crowd support for the Argentine team. But to do it away from home in a way, I think, reduced the stress levels on the fifth rubber player. And they were playing out of their skins.
Yeah, the performance of Delbonis made me think that maybe everything we were saying about Leo Maier after the semi-final against GB, and we were saying cometh the hour, cometh the man then, maybe it's not a Leo Maier thing, maybe it's an Argentine thing. And it really was an incredible all-round team performance. And
Orsanic deserves huge credit
exactly,
for that.
Understandably,
as well.
Orsanic, a very, very proud man after that.
The guys were amazing today. Juan Martín won an incredible match. His comeback is the comeback of the history. His comeback today was also the comeback of the Davis Cup. He's a genius. His heart is so big. And Fede played the best match of his life. He was on top of every ball. He played a perfect match. Perfect match. I'm surprised in a good way. I thought he couldn't win so easy. It's a privilege to be with this group. It's a privilege to be in a place where you can send a message to the people and trying to make things better.
So that is Argentine team captain Daniel Orsanic, probably the proudest man in tennis, if not sport, if not the world at the moment. And we're going to do our end of season awards at the end of this show, and I'm sure there'll be a few shouts for him as coach of the year, but I won't do any spoilers just yet. But certainly he's undoubtedly on the shortlist. It's something we debated after the final last year, isn't it, David? After every sort of big blockbuster Davis Cup or Fed Cup tie, how big a role does the coach play? Obviously there's the team selection and all of that, but in terms of during the matches, how much of a role do you think Orsanic played yesterday in the comeback of Juan Martín Del Potro, for example?
It's so difficult to put your finger on. I would always want to give the benefit of the doubt and say that they have a significant impact. Certainly a guy like Orsanic, who I know a little bit and have always thought is a really, really decent guy as a human being, but also his selections were surprising at times. We were surprised that it wasn't Maier in the singles, for a starter. And let's not forget Delbonis took Cilic to five sets. So, you know, it wasn't a one-off this match. He picked Maier in that semi-final when we really weren't expecting that as a fifth rubber. Certainly, I mean, the assumption was that Del Potro would play both singles rubbers, and that didn't happen, and they got the win. There's your evidence right there. Now, it may be circumstantial, but that to me is a sign of how capable he is and how much he brings to the table. Del Potro is just a great player, and I imagine that when you're two sets to love down and you've never, and that's the other thing, he's never won from two sets to love down before. I think you have to say, well, maybe Orsanic had an impact there as well. But he's obviously doing something right, isn't he? And just one of the great stories for you do feel for Cilic and Croatia, though. Two sets to love up, two rubbers to one up, and they didn't win. How?
Yeah, you could have, you know, forgiven the engraver for starting to write Croatia on the trophy, couldn't you? I mean, it seemed like that was the only outcome at that moment. It really was amazing. And even after Del Potro performed that incredible comeback, Croatia was still the favourites to go on and win it. Karlovic was very much still the favourite to win that fifth rubber. And this is tough to listen to, really, because we've got some audio from Ivo Karlovic, and obviously a very, very tough moment in his long career.
It's a hard loss, not only for me, but, you know, for the whole team. We were really close to win. Marin had opportunities, but you know, this is life, this is tennis, and right now it's really hard, but I mean, there's always tomorrow, and tomorrow we'll all be a little bit better. I mean, that's for sure. Right now it's difficult, yeah. In the beginning of the match, I was doing well. I had opportunities on his serve. I had a break point. I didn't use it. And after that, he began to return unbelievable. Just unbelievable. I don't know what to say other than to congratulate him and the Argentinian team.
So that's Ivo Karlovic. I'd agree with you, David, that he didn't do masses wrong. He is a guy with, I think he'd probably be the first to admit, a pretty one-dimensional game, in that there's no plan B, is there? There's no plan C. If his serve is being neutralised, there's not an awful lot he could do. And the way Delbonis was reading his serve, it was like he was possessed. It was like he had, an ethereal voice whispering in his ear, telling him which way Karlovic was going to serve. I've not seen the Karlovic serve neutralised in that way. I've seen it sort of blocked back brilliantly by Federer, and you know, obviously Andy Murray's dealt with it very well a couple of times. I remember at Wimbledon a couple of years ago, but still, I've never seen a man possessed in the way that Delbonis was yesterday. I'm loath to do this, David, because it's
style.
No, I'm not. But if pole vault has taught us anything, it's that you love pointless hypothetical speculation about things. So I ask you, question one, had Borna Coric been fit, would the outcome of this Davis Cup final have been any different?
Well, first of all, I'm hurt. Second of all, let's do a pole vault and find it. No, all right, let's not do one.
It's a pole vault of one person. Okay. So, I'm polling one individual.
Had Borna Coric been in the team, would it have made a difference, is the question you're asking.
To the overall outcome.
That is a tough one, isn't it? Oh, I really do want to ask that. I am definitely asking that after this podcast is complete. But anyway, my opinion, I just don't know. I mean,
David,
wait a minute,
no,
I haven't finished
that's
yet.
The whole, I mean, that's the answer to every pole vault ever. No one knows. I'm not letting you get away with that.
And that's the of it, Catherine Whittaker. First of all, let me just put my case forward here. For a start, you've got one bloke who's 6'11". You've got another bloke who's about 5'9".
I'm aware of the vital statistics, David. This isn't getting us any closer.
I'm trying to talk my way into an answer here, because I really don't know what the answer is. Would Borna Coric have made a difference in that match? He would have played Delbonis, and then he would have played first of all Del Potro. And he wouldn't have beaten Del Potro. I don't think so. Delbonis, no, I don't think he would have beaten them. I don't think he would have done. I think it would feel wrong to say that he would, because I'm not convinced he would. And it would feel churlish
almost
to say he would.
Victor Skugel should have been put in for both singles rubbers. That would really made the difference.
You might want to get his name right for a start, Catherine. Franco.
Franco Skugel.
I mean, you two are supposed to be best mates.
Victor's the younger brother, sorry. Franco Skugel, my fave. Yeah, had he played, you know, both singles and doubles, I really think we could be seeing Croatia's name on the trophy today. But anyway, a second pointless hypothetical question for you, David.
Oh, pole vault two by Catherine Whittaker.
Had that court been a little bit faster, as the Croatians had wanted, would the result have been different?
No, it wouldn't. It wouldn't, because the aces were coming thick and fast. Cilic served over 30 aces. Karlovic served plenty. I don't think so. I may be wrong. And Goran Ivanišević may look at it and say, well, you put that on the court I used to play on, the carpet court, which was Greece Lightning. Maybe it would have been different. I don't think so. I just feel as though the game has changed in as much as the strings allow the returns. If you're really on, I think you can get hold of the ball a bit better. And Delbonis used that perfectly. I think anybody who suggests any sort of, oh, if this or if that, it feels churlish to me.
Right then, I'll take that. That was a properly decisive answer. I'll accept that. Well
done.
What
do you think, Catherine?
I agree with you. I agree with you on both points, actually. I don't think either factor would have made a decisive difference. They could have done, but I think on balance, probably not. It did feel, I mean, I know this is ridiculous romantic rhetoric, but it did just feel like that was how it was going to be, regardless of any logic or any, you know, practical factors. That was just how it was going to be. And the fact that Croatia went 2-1 up and the fact that Cilic went 2 sets to love up was almost just a way of making it more romantic for Argentina's eventual victory. You know, the Croatian team were just victims of cruel fate. I mean, I don't believe in fate, but that's certainly how it feels and it seems. And who apart from Croatian people can possibly deny this of Del Potro and Orsanic and Delbonis and all of Argentina, really, because it's been earned over the years. It's been earned since 1981, hasn't it? So, it was an uplifting day for tennis for everybody but the Croatians. How was the response in your household, David?
Well, we actually only got through the fourth rubber, my kids and I, and because
Who were they supporting?
It went on pretty late. They were all supporting Cilic because they're all half Croatian. So that was what was going on in our household. But when that didn't happen, off to bed they went, and I sort of watched in my lonesome. But no, it was the thing is, I just felt torn because yes, I do have a little bit of a Croatian favoritism because of my family situation, but also
fluent Croatian speaker, aren't you, David?
Da.
That's where you get your linguistic skills from.
Da.
All those on point pronunciations.
Yeah, absolutely right. That's my Croatian spoken for the day on the tennis podcast. And at the same time, though, you know, you're watching Del Potro and you're thinking, how can you not want this guy to succeed? It was one of those. So I'm a glasses half full kind of person. So, you know, great news all round, I would say, overall.
And if you are in need of a pick me up on this Monday, or you could be listening to it any day, but if you're hot off the mark, then you'll be listening to it on Monday, then do check out the video of the Argentine team making their way into the post-tie press conference when they're all singing and dancing. It is very, very uplifting, and if you watch that, it's pretty hard to begrudge them any of that joy. Now then, David, that is pretty much the 2016 tennis season done and dusted, isn't it? And the 2018 tennis season is about 3 weeks away, because that is the nature of the off-season in tennis. It pretty much doesn't exist. But
did you just say 2018?
Did I?
Yeah, blimey. Just skip a year. What happens next year, Catherine? What happens in 2017?
I'm not into odd numbers. We will do 2017 if we must. Yes, it is but 3 weeks away, and we are going to have a bit of time off, but this is one of the last tennis podcasts of the 2016 tennis season, so we'd probably better do our end of season awards, hadn't we? Because they were a bit of a hit last year, weren't they?
Well, yeah, but not because of us.
No, we had Alan Mills on last year. I'm disappointed to inform the listeners that we don't have Alan Mills this year. It's just me and David.
Can we have Rosie? Is she around?
She's not here. Oh,
charming.
No, the disappointment that I
she
can't...
ditched us, gone to the ice skating podcast.
No, but there's an idea. Every podcast needs a canine mascot. Right then.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
The Tennis Podcast End of Season Awards. I feel like this needs a jingle, David. Have you got a jingle?
Nope.
No jingle. Okay. Right then, I'll just have to give it some welly. The End of Season Awards. We have some categories. Some have been suggested by listeners. Some have been suggested by us. There's not a lot of science to it. It's purely our subjective opinions, but that basically is what the Tennis Podcast is all about, isn't it? And David doing some polling. So, should we crack on?
Sure.
Right then, let's get straight down to the nitty-gritty, because first category I've got on my list, player of the season.
Right, well, blokes and women, yeah? Two separate categories.
Yes, those are the two available genders.
Okay.
Oh, no, right. I've got an overall player of the season.
Have you? Oh, I've got one of each.
No, that's a cop-out. We're doing overall. Well, I'll go first if you want.
Go on then.
Angelique Kerber.
Andy Murray loves you.
I mean, obviously, look, if there's a shortlist, Andy Murray's on it, and he's a very, very close second. But he went into this season world number two. It is more of a surprise that Angelique Kerber has won two Grand Slams and finished the year world number one.
Hold on a minute. Andy Murray was 8,000 points behind Novak Djokovic 6 months ago.
Yeah, it's still more of a surprise. If I asked you this time last year which of these scenarios is more likely, I still think you'd have said the Andy Murray scenario. So I'm going Angelique Kerber.
Irritatingly, I actually agree with that final point, because a year ago, before, I mean, it's hard to remember a time when Angelique Kerber hadn't won a Grand Slam in a way. But if you go back a year ago when she played pretty poorly by her standards in the WTA finals, she was nowhere near winning that tournament, and she came out a different woman at the start of the Australian Open. And let's not forget, she was match point down in the first round of the Australian Open against Misaki Doi. And that is the one that I still don't think we talk about enough.
Agreed.
She was match point down. She ended up winning the tournament, winning the US Open, reaching the final of the Olympics and Wimbledon, and finishing the world as world number one. I mean, it is mind-blowing.
Thanks for making my point for me, David. That's
no,
great.
Sadly, I have to agree. So, I mean, I was going to go men, Andy Murray, women, Angelique Kerber.
No, but that's too obvious. You can't have one of each because that's just too obvious.
Are you going to grant me the ability to at least choose the same person?
Yes.
Right, fine, I have.
Right, this is going to have to get more interesting, isn't it?
We haven't got Alan Mills this year. People.
Right, next, this could get more interesting. Heroes and villains of the season. This suggestion sent in by our dear friend of the show, Dave Levy, who I think is getting married next week. So advance congratulations to Dave Levy.
Well, he's my villain.
Why is that?
Well, just generally. Watford playing West Brom next week, I think. So, I'm not going to have any favours with him next week.
Okie doke. In terms of tennis, David, I'd hate to have to rename the podcast. In terms of tennis, what you got?
Heroes, Juan Martín Del Potro, who I just think is the ultimate hero of the year.
Yeah.
Villains, Maria Sharapova for failing a doping test.
Yeah.
And Nick Kyrgios for
being a plonker.
This is probably pretty severe for me, because as anybody who listens to the show knows, I love the guy. I love watching him. I forgive him way too much, probably. But what he did in Shanghai was unforgivable. And the only thing I would hope is that the action that has been taken will lead to him not doing that again and getting back to what I love about him, which is just about everything else. But yeah, that to me was a real low point of the year. Sharapova was a low point of the year in many ways. So those are my two villains.
I can't argue with any of that. I've got different answers, but this is probably a category that's purely subjective. There's no right or wrong. But villains, I've got Ray Moore, a former tournament director of Indian Wells, who said that women tennis players should be down on their knees thanking men because they've been riding on their coattails for years. And I won't repeat all the rest of the stuff he said, but he lost his job and that's the end of that. And hopefully we'll never hear those sort of things expressed ever again. And my hero is everyone that said sensible things in opposition of that viewpoint, and in particular Serena Williams, who said pretty pithily, no woman should be down on her knees thanking any man for anything. And I think very well done, Serena, for being so unequivocal on that front. And also special mention on the villain front for that bloke I bought lunch for in Monte Carlo that never paid me back.
Yeah, sorry about that, Catherine. I'll remember next time.
No, I don't know. Did I ever mention it on the podcast? It was on my Twitter.
It wasn't me, everybody. Before you start,
I'm joking.
It wasn't
David, no.
It wasn't me.
It was
an
unnamed journalist that I bought lunch for because he didn't have any cash, and it turned out to be a cash-only sandwich vendor. And he said he'd come and find me in the press room, and he never did. And I don't have very good facial recognition, so I was unable to identify him and collar him. And yeah, he never paid me back. So I'm still €10 down for the year. Now then, shot of the season. Singular shot of the season. I'm going to get in there first with this one because I'm worried we've gone for the same one because it's very difficult to remember individual shots from 12 months ago. So I've gone for one that was hit yesterday by Juan Martín Del Potro. I've gone for the tweener lob. Which not only was a remarkable shot, a clean winner, but it also, if you're going to be really romantic about the narrative, pretty much sparked the greatest comeback in Davis Cup history. So that's what I've gone for.
Yeah, see, I was trying to search my mind for something that had some sort of romantic narrative to it, because even though often that is nonsense, it feels like that's what one should do. You should find a shot that meant something in the grand scheme of a match and then a tournament. But I can't think of one. I mean, there are probably dozens that if we were to go through various parts of the season, they would come back to me. But we've sort of knocked this together pretty hastily. And the one that really strikes me is one from the WTA finals last month, which was hit by Kerber. She was way out to her right after a lung-busting rally, I think against Dominika Sibulkova. And she hit the most absurd angled backhand cross-court that hit the line, that I remember commentating on it and just saying, she hasn't made that, has she? You know, it was just so absurd that it could have gone in that I struggled to believe it. So that's the one that stands out to me. It, you know, it didn't win her a title, but it kind of encapsulated her year, that feeling of, she hasn't done that, has she?
And an all-time great shot made better by, though he says so himself, some all-time great commentary.
Pretty horrendous, isn't it, to actually choose one of your commentary moments?
Yep. But there we are. Okay, then, moving swiftly on to spare your blushes, David. Breakthrough star.
I'm not blushing.
Breakthrough star of the year. Who you got?
Oh, breakthrough star. Oh, I've got five people. Am I allowed
that? No, you haven't. You've got one person.
Oh, crikey. All right, then, well, I'll choose Naomi Osaka.
Oh, balls.
I can't believe
That's
she used
I've
that
got
word
as well.
On this tennis podcast, everybody. I mean, can you believe that? Terrible.
Yeah, it's a word that it's very much on my mind due to Ed Balls's exit from Strictly Come Dancing last night, which I'm still reeling from.
Right.
The joy that we as a public have been deprived of. And don't get me started, David. I digress.
Do you want to hear one of my other four?
No, I don't. Well, yes, I do. Could you pick another one so that I can have Naomi Osaka, please?
All right, then I'll have Daria Kasatkina.
Okay. She didn't do anything big, though, did she? I mean, she's very good. She's very good. But she reached the final.
Why am I talking myself out of my own choice?
She reached the final in Tokyo. A couple of third rounds in Grand Slams. She's only 18. That's not bad, is it?
Well, hence why I went for her. Anyway, I also went for Alex Zverev and Dominic Thiem, but they kind of... Zverev feels kind of like a breakthrough. Thiem feels like most improved in a way on the bloke side, and like big breakthrough into the top 10. Joe Konta, I mean, come on.
Yeah, you know, I almost went for Jo Konta because, yes, although her first breakthrough came in the 2015 season, the fourth round of the US Open, reaching the top 10, and I persistently predicted that she wouldn't reach the top 10 this year. So, yeah, more fool me. And, yeah, but I have got – sorry, Jo, as great as that was, I have gone for Naomi Osaka. Coach of the year, who you got? Actually, no, do I get to go first? On this one? I think I do.
Yeah, go on.
I've got Magnus Norman, which I know is the same winner of the ATP official Coach of the Year award. And I've got it because I boiled it down to what big achievement do I think wouldn't have happened without the influence of the coach? You know, I don't think Andy Murray would have achieved everything he has this year without Ivan Lendl, but I think he would have achieved some big, great things. I don't think Stan Wawrinka would be a Grand Slam champion without Magnus Norman. I don't think he would have won this year's US Open without Magnus Norman. So that's why I've gone for Magnus Norman.
But would you have thought that Angelique Kerber would be a Grand Slam champion without Torben Belt?
No, but I wouldn't have thought, I mean, contender, contender.
I can feel Alan Mills nodding along with me here, is what I can feel.
Right. Well, he's not
so
there to Torben verify
Belt
that.
It is. I mean, you know, for sort of overall piece of work of constructed by a player over the course of the year. I mean, the woman's world number one, for goodness sake. So it's Torben Belt. So sorry, you lose that one. Meltdown of the year is next, isn't it?
It is next, yeah.
Well, Dimitrov in Istanbul's got to be the one, hasn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You were going to go for a different one, weren't you?
Well, no, I've interpreted the question slightly differently, David. I've gone for Novak Djokovic because over the past 6 months, it's been sort of a slow motion meltdown, which I just never, ever thought that I would see, from utter complete dominance and 14-1 odds to complete the calendar year Golden Slam, to a guy that walked on the court against Andy Murray in the last match of the season fighting for the world number one spot, saying there was never a moment in that match when he thought he could win. That, for me, considering the peak that he was at, is a meltdown.
That's good, Catherine. But Dimitrov, so annoyed with how it was going, having served for the match against Diego Schwartzman and not managed to win, trashed every racket in his bag and then walked up and shook hands 2 points before the end.
Yeah, he effectively defaulted a final.
Yeah, anyway,
he defaulted a final. Yeah, I think both those answers are completely valid. They're just interpreting the question in different ways. Moving on, story of the season. I rather suspect we've gone for the same answer here, but then I've gone for Del Potro as an overall.
I've gone for Andy Murray world number one. I think it's extraordinary that Andy Murray is world number one. Not only because I really wondered whether he ever would be. I thought maybe he would be early next year. But secondly, because of how far behind he was. To overhaul Djokovic. And no, he's had some help, not least because of the factors you've just mentioned with meltdown of the year. But Murray finishing world number one, I think, is a wonderful story.
It is a wonderful story. I've gone for Del Potro just because...
You're an old romantic.
Old romantic, yeah. And all the elements of it, the Olympics, you know, seeing him cry. I mean, if Murray had cried at any stage, I might agree with you, but...
I mean, you know, Andy Murray has done his fair share of crying over the last 5 years.
He has,
and
but not
suddenly
in 2016.
He misses out on the big award because he didn't cry.
Yeah, it's a tough award ceremony. Next, scandal of the season. I've got Sharapova.
Same here.
Yeah, there we go.
I mean, there's been a few,
there's
haven't there?
There's been a few, you know. Yeah. There are a lot of contenders.
I mean, that was the biggest shock in terms of surprising news stories. I mean, that when I consider how many of us were trying to predict what her big announcement was going to be, nobody came up with that.
We recorded a podcast section on her retirement in anticipation of that being the big announcement that she had telegraphed in advance. So yeah, that was an enormous scandal. You know our thoughts on it and her subsequent reactions to the various developments. We won't go into them again. I think probably that is enough said on that front. Best interview or press conference of the season,
well,
David?
Well, I've actually
gone for one of your own.
I've gone for Johanna Konta Chasing Dreams.
Oh my God, he has gone for one of his own. BT Sport.
No, I haven't really, but you know.
Oh gosh, I thought you were being serious there. I was writing my resignation letter to the podcast.
I've gone for Elena Vesnina at Wimbledon after she reached the semi-finals, and she did a press conference after that that was, it was pretty long, but you just did not notice the time going. It was only when you got the transcript afterwards and the number of pages that it ran to that you just, I mean, it would be between that and the similarly delirious victory speech of Angelique Kerber straight after winning the Australian Open. Those moments where you just see the, you're lifting the lid on somebody's personality and they're not got any filter there. They're just showing you who they are. And it was lovely.
Well, speaking of no filter, I've gone for Dan Evans at the US Open. which could probably be any interview Dan Evans did at the US Open, but or ever.
Especially one done
I
by me.
I have gone for the one where he was asked whether his parents were here and he said no, and he was asked whether his parents were watching at home and he said no. He said his dad might be, but his mum has never watched him play tennis. And he went, well, I'm not bothered. I'm not that interested in what she does either. And then he was asked, well, what does she do? You know, expecting sort of, you know, I don't know, toilet cleaner or something. She's a nurse, he replied. Obviously, completely unworthy, uninteresting profession. Thanks, Dan. Moving on. Disappointment of the season. What you got?
Roger Federer's injury.
Oh, so have I. I should have gone first. It was my turn to go first as well. I'm doing this all wrong.
What's your backup choice?
I didn't have one, David. No, we're not allowed backup choices.
All right. Well, I haven't got one either, so there we are. Yeah, 6 months into the year, not to see the best of him.
Not to see him at the Olympics.
Not knowing how many more times we will get to see him. It was a tough one to take, but he seems up for it. He seems up for the comeback.
Okay, shock or surprise of the season?
I'd say in terms of, is it my go first?
Well, it seems, that's how this seems to be going. I'm confident
you go first.
I'm letting you go first because I'm confident we haven't got the same one here.
All right, well, I've sort of got the Sharapova drugs test as the biggest surprise and shock of the season, but on-court action, Monica Puig winning the Olympics.
Oh, that's a good one. Yeah, that is a good one. I haven't got that.
And she probably deserves a better mention in one or two of the other categories as well. I mean, that was a fabulous story.
Yes, well, okay, so I have gone for Zhang Shuai at the Australian Open, and I've gone for it here. Perhaps shock or surprise isn't quite the right. She deserves an award in this end of year awards, and I've gone for her because it was just the most wonderful story, and because it was right at the beginning of the season. I don't think it's being remembered with quite the significance that it should be, because she had never
won
a Grand Slam match, David, and she reached the quarterfinals. She was going to quit the sport. Her parents came to watch her at a Grand Slam for the very first time because it was going to be her last one. And
Monica Puig won the Olympics.
I know. Monica Puig's great, don't get me wrong, but come on, you know how much I love it when people win when their parents are watching.
What, you're trying to tell me that Monica Puig's parents weren't watching her win Olympic gold?
I know, but she didn't talk about the fact that her parents were watching. I'm a real sucker for that. And there's so many lovely elements to the story. Maybe she should have got story of the year, I don't know. So many lovely elements. She said that her countrywoman, Zheng Ji, she always played well at the Australian Open. And this was the year she didn't come to the Australian Open because she was injured. And Zhang Shuai used her lucky locker. And she specifically asked for that locker because her friend Zheng Ji told her that it was always lucky for her. And it was lucky for her this year. And it was just great, wasn't it? And 14 Grand Slams without a single win. Come on, that's pretty good. I mean, that's not good. The fact that she then reached the quarterfinals was pretty good.
Well, I don't agree with a word you've just said, but it was quite a fabulous answer. So I enjoyed it immensely.
Okie doke. Favourite tennis podcast of the season, David?
I did not come up with this category.
Yeah, which of our work do you think was the best?
When we launched Pole Vault.
You don't really mean that.
Of course I mean that. And when it gave rise to your meltdown about it a couple of weeks back. That was funny.
Well, I've gone for another sort of meltdown episode. I've gone for the one where you recorded my aggro with the bus driver in New York, because it is indelible evidence of my moral victory in that scenario, which was very important.
That does deserve to be remarked upon. I agree. Fair enough.
Okay, then. Last category. I should have a jingle for this as well, but alas. Biggest single achievement in tennis of 2016.
Del Potro's comeback.
Really?
From where he was. From where he was.
Yeah. Well, I've gone for Murray, world number one. But I guess there's some, you know, I went for Delpo story of the season. And, you know, I suppose there are lots of categories that I guess the answers could have been a little bit interchangeable. But yes, I don't think we're disagreeing on the significance of both the Murray number one and the Del Potro comeback achievements, are we? I think we're pretty much in agreement that both are staggering.
So I've won the awards then.
The winners of the awards have won the awards, David. there's no winner amongst us. I know for a fact that we don't have a pole vault on this week's episode because you haven't done any pole vaults. I suspect we will pole vault all of those end of season awards to see how violently you disagree with both of us, probably me more so,
and that's what I deserve. You can bet that will be happening.
And I will leave you to that. But, David, I think that might be a wrap on the 2016 tennis season. It is not our very last podcast of the 2016 tennis season. We will be having just one more when we'll bring you details of the 2017 tennis season and how you can get involved. That will be up in the next few days. But in terms of tennis, balls being struck, matches being won and lost, that's it, isn't it?
That's it. Crikey, I'm exhausted. Where's the ice bath?
And on that note, that is it for the 2016 tennis season. For the BNP Paribas Davis Cup final, what a final it was. And from this tennis podcast, we'll speak to you soon. Goodbye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
It's the question that's on everyone's mind. How do you live a good life? Is it about work, health, or relationships? What about happiness, meaning, and money? What really matters? And how can you dramatically improve all of these things? These are the questions we explore every week on the top-ranked podcast, Good Life Project, hosted by award-winning author and perpetual seeker, Jonathan Fields, which also happens to be me. Every week, I sit down with world-renowned researchers, experts, and scions of art and industry on the Good Life Project podcast. This week, in fact, we're sharing a fantastic conversation with the author, Elizabeth Gilbert, about a single practice that changed her life. Listen to the Good Life Project podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.